Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving.
And now it's time for Homegrown, your only show in Charlottesville dedicated to local art, brought to you by Blue Moon Diner, with your hosts, Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones. And now here's Clinton and Leslie. Kind of had to, right? I mean, that's just the... Indeed. Shall we go? So, Leslie, it's been a while since we've been hosts together.
I know, but you know what? It feels good. It feels like someplace so familiar and so warm, and you know, like an old shoe.
Shall we do the full thing? Shall we go totally old school?
We should.
Our guest
old school.
Is looking at us. She's like,
I have no idea what's going on right now.
When the show started, Leslie and I used to be just the hosts, and then we actually got David, who classed the place up a little bit and helped us raise the bar. But now David is off somewhere, and the bar is lowered. So should we go old school?
Sure, go old school.
You ready for it?
I am.
Here we go. Good morning, Sunday morning.
I love it.
Welcome to Homegrown, your show about local art. I'm the one that they call Clinton, and I am here with the person. Heart is big. Heart's so big, it covers time zones.
Ooh.
More inscrutable than a bank of burner phones. More gratuitous nudity than Game of Thrones.
That's right.
She loves Adrian more than two Sylvester Stallones. Obama lover more than he loved drones. It's Leslie M. Scott Jones.
All right. See, that's an introduction, my friends, right there. Thank you, Clinton. I have missed your rhyming introductions. I really have. Now I have to live up to all of that. That is the predicament I'm in right now. But it's wonderful to be with you today. So how has your week been?
My week? Let me.
Yeah. Do that. Grab that.
All right.
How has my week been? Yeah.
My week has been fine. It's a lot of work, lot of things to do.
Yeah.
If people don't know the work of the work, hey, look, yeah, what up?
What's up, girl? We got a visitor in the studio. Hold on.
I'm gonna leave now.
We're getting a shout out.
Oh, we're getting a shout out.
We are getting a shout out.
We're getting a shout out on Rock Station.
Yes, on WVAI. That's awesome. Yeah, she said she was going to try and find some like Beastie Boys or for us and give us a major shout out.
I think that's excellent.
I know.
I think that's great.
She only did it because when she got into the studio, I went and, you know, gave her the double horns. And she was like, that's it. You're getting a shout out.
Shout out on 94.7.
Woo! It's been a week, man. Like
it has. Yeah, for people who don't know what the artistic life is like, it is, or at least at this level of the artistic life. I don't know about what Robert Downey Jr. is doing right now.
We don't know about what people who like get paid to do it.
I don't know about people who get to go to some big house that was built by slaves.
Yeah.
Work a week and then jet down.
And play golf. Yeah. Don't know about that.
A billionaire's game.
I don't know about that life. But.
Or so says my men in China. I don't know what their lives are like, but the artistic life down, it's like feast or famine.
Yeah.
That's what there are times when it's like there's not much going on and you're just sort of, it's just you and your PlayStation.
Right. Right. Or your Wii, you know, just.
Exactly. And then there are times when just like everything, you're just like every moment is spent, working
with,
on some project.
With and, art. Yeah, and so this is the project that...
That's that project
we're
right
working
there.
On right now.
That evil project.
Well, it's not evil. It's not, well, I mean, you know, August Wilson. But,
considering the amount of sleep I haven't gotten this week, yeah, it's getting up to evil at this point.
Oh. Well, you're the one who made the rehearsal schedule, Clinton. Like,
I don't mind the rehearsal schedule. Tell the work I'm doing outside of the rehearsal schedule. The rehearsal schedule, that's why I'm napping through rehearsal. That's just fine.
Don't tell people
that. You think I'm actually there? No.
Why would you tell people that?
Because, you know.
Okay, so you cannot.
Because they need to know we are about the bitter truth here.
Okay, but you cannot nap through the classes because, you know, you and I are teaching them.
Get
so
that.
Don't nap through those, okay?
Well, and I think the I think it's a figurative I in that sense.
Oh, my God.
Because, you know, no one wants to hear me.
No, seriously. People need to go to Eventbrite and sign up for these classes because they're going to be awesome. We're going to be talking about.
I wouldn't say awesome.
Clinton.
Bitter truth.
Clinton?
The bitter truth.
Stop it. You okay, for those of you who know Clinton, you know he's like a curmudgeon and, you know, this is why he and I work well together because he says no to everything and I say yes to everything. So, you know, don't.
Right now I'm saying yawn.
Don't.
To
oh my God. Really? Really?
Not because it's boring.
Oh, no, it's never boring. We are never boring. That's for sure. Okay, I think we need to get to our first guest.
Do you think so?
I think we need to get to our first guest. Because, okay. I mean, right. She's sitting over here wondering.
She's so patiently.
What in the heck is going on?
Well, then let's do that.
Yes.
Really enjoying every second of it.
Yay. Coming to Homegrown for the first time. Local author Shelley Sack here. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and so pleased to be here, especially with such bright banter on a Sunday morning when most of us are still just barely foggily making our way through our first cup of coffee.
Well, you know, I've had two cups of coffee this morning.
Well done, you.
That's the only reason I am upright.
We are here right to unfog people's coffee. That's what.
that's our job. It's in the job description. The owners of the station wrote it in.
That's I like beer coffee, too. Yes, unfogged coffee works for me.
Yes.
Unfogged coffee. So, Ms. Sakir.
Mm-hmm.
You.
Or Sakir.
Sakir.
Depending upon what country we are in. That's right.
It's all those years of French I took. I keep wanting to call you Sakier.
You can. No worries. I like the pretentiousness of it all.
There we go.
An air of,
you know, what's the point of being an author if you can't enjoy a little pretentious?
Just a little bit. You know, you did all that work, right?
Pretty soon I'm going to start speaking in an English accent just to add 30 IQ points to myself.
There you go.
It's not like you're a sculptor or a glass blower. Like, you know, like you're not earthy. You're an author.
Oh, I am very earthy. Yeah, I'm totally earthy. But I am not a sculptor or anything else that requires earthiness as part of its job description.
If any sculptor or glassblowers want to kick my ass for suggesting
Clinton
that they're
won't
not
be available.
Ethereal, come on the show.
No, Clinton.
You come here and do it yourselves.
Right. You can't just meet him in the parking lot around 11:30.
Right. That's when I'm meeting my weed connection. So,
word to the wise.
Oh, wow. Oh, please.
So,
if any policemen were listening, he was joking.
Yeah, you're joking. So far off of YA topics.
So okay. All right. So we're here actually to talk about your book.
Yes.
What have you been authorizing?
This year I have been authorizing a YA book. It is a young adult historical fiction novel about a 16-year-old Scottish girl living in 1715 who's raised entirely by six burly Scotsmen.
And six, count them, six burly Scotsmen.
Yeah, and they are not your average American, your average individuals, because most of the time they're about one heartbeat away from having a noose thrown around their necks. So they basically traverse the British countryside with the endeavor to collect coin and ammunition and arms, working on behalf of the Jacobites in order to restore.
Right, because usually they're traversing Scotland.
Right, well,
right? But in this book.
Britain, yes. It is all of Scotland and England.
Uh-huh.
But they're attempting to restore the rightful throne to James Edward Francis Stuart, or James Francis Edward Stuart. I can't remember which of his middle names was first. But, you know, spoiler alert, he does not get the throne back.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's kind of like all in all of our world history books, so it's really not going to affect you if you're reading the book. But yeah, back in 1707, Scotland and England sort of married together.
I love the idea that all the people who slept through their English history
are now getting it.
Are like, wait. James doesn't get the throne?
Yeah. Oh, man. No, he doesn't get the throne. He didn't
do it. I'm so sorry to let you know about that. But so 1707, the Act of Union was passed where Scotland and England sort of married together
yep.
and mm-hmm. became Great Britain as we know and love them today. And 1714, Queen Anne died and left no issue. Therefore, the throne was vacant and the Stuarts were really hoping to snag back that cushy seat.
Yes.
But sadly, it did not go their way. And it ended up going to the Hanoverians. So all the Georges, 1 through 4.
Yeah.
And, right, and which is significant. I mean, this is the time in English history where the throne shifts from being, and they mention this in the book. They shifts from being occupied by a French descended family to Germans.
Yes.
Right. It was a bit of a shocker because you know the first George didn't even speak English.
Right.
So that was a little eyebrow rising for some of the folks in Great Britain, but. You know, I think one of the reasons that the Stuarts were ousted was, as my research, which is by no means exhaustive, has come to reveal, is the fact that they were Catholic. Mm-hmm. And a mm-hmm. lot of voices were, you know, creating some sort of dissent and discomfort with the fact that the Pope might have a slightly long arm's reach into
yes.
the government and politics and policy and legislation within Great Britain. So...
As most of the popes in that time were wont to do.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was I think, you know, basically James was voted off the island. Oh, like literally.
Yeah, so, literally. Yeah.
He spent most of his time, I think, in the court of King Louis. So back in France.
Wow. It's amazing to think of how a religious combat like that in the 1700s could be so severe that it could affect the security of a nation. One would think that with a situation like that, where differing religious beliefs in the 1700s were so severe, that a group of people might just break off and, oh, I don't know, have some place where you have a separation between
yes.
you know
church and state,
yeah,
something like that.
That's a pensive thought.
It is. That's one of those things that make you go,
A pensive thought on the mic.
Yeah.
A mic pensive thought, you might say.
Which is exactly what you want in a radio show, all the pensive thoughts.
Wow, I said it was going to be puntastic today, and it's living up to that, isn't it?
Anyway, name of the book?
The name of the book is The Freemason's Daughter.
And she... This young girl
is Jenna. The protagonist is Jenna, but she basically parallels her life and Scotland are sort of running on this tandem track where they are both in pursuit of autonomy and independence in very uncertain times. So,
yeah, that was one of the fun things about the full disclosure, I have not finished reading it yet.
The dinosaurs die at the end.
Sorry. Shelley!
Spoilers!
I want to prepare people. It's a really bloody ending.
That's it. I'm done!
But yeah, one of the interesting things about it was seeing her... Oh, there you go. Seeing her at 16 and, like, I mean, having a 16-year-old who is starting to feel her oats and wanting to experience some independence, not necessarily the safest place to do it when you're with a bunch of people who are basically political insurgents.
Right.
One of the things I wanted to highlight was how the events in our life can, and but more importantly, the people who we are surrounded with while these events are unfolding are so incredibly... influential in who it is that we become later on as adults. And it forces us to ask ourselves some very uncomfortable questions. They bubble up to the surface, mainly, where do I fit in? And in troublesome times like this, you know, that can be a very heady question where very specific gender roles were defined and, you know, people were not allowed to break out of social status. And, you know, we have it a lot easier today for, you know, young women or minorities just to be able to choose. I don't feel like belonging where I'm told I belong.
Yeah.
Therefore, I'm going to break through the boundaries. And I like doing that. It's a little bit... argued sometimes with historical fiction if you try and put a very, you know, radical character inside times that aren't typically full with radical characters, but there are plenty of individuals who do that. It's just, you know, it's our job as authors to kind of bring them to the light so that people can see it was done back then just as well as it is today. So
people
stand up for something new and interesting in their lives.
So how did you decide to write this story? Like, I mean, are you just an Anglophile and love that history?
No. So I first of all, have you ever seen a Highlander in full regalia?
I have.
Okay, so
I have.
Question answered.
I have a little affinity for the Scots.
Men in kilts. Answers.
Right?
Yeah.
So, oh my God.
What is it about the kilt?
We'll talk later.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. We've got rules here.
Yeah.
So for about a period of 20 years or so, I did a lot of traveling back and forth to Scotland, and I visited an enormous amount of castles and grave sites and battlefields and piles of rock. And I fell in love with the culture and the people and the mythology and the folklore and the food and, oh my good, the whiskey.
Yeah.
Really, really.
I'm a whiskey girl too.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yep. Single malt scotch all the
way. Right? I mean, like, you can't be mad at that. Like,
it's something you embrace with both arms about the size of a barrel.
Yes.
You know, like that kind of a thing. So
anyway,
I felt that every time I visited, there were so many stories with these people and their culture is so dense and so rich. And it just begged for me to have to write about it. And and so I find I'm very, very drawn to Scotland. So I do like, I really, really love it. But the thing about the Scots is that's so cool is that it is said wherever they've traveled together in great numbers, the first thing that they did was build a kirk. That's a church.
Yeah.
Then they built a bank. Then they built a pub. Super important.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, they built a lodge. So I do not pretend by any stretch of the imagination to be an expert on Freemasonry.
Right.
But I started.
Which these burly guys are. They're all Freemasons.
They're all Freemasons. Because I studied such a very small time frame and a very slim slice of the planet.
Right.
And a very tiny group of individuals who were involved in it. So that which I know can fill a thimble. But that which I know I'm happy to share with you because I think it's really, really interesting. And also Freemasonry is a really fantastic subject for authors to decide to explore in their writing because there's no general consensus as to the truth and veracity of their origins.
Right.
And you could take a cross-section of individuals who are Freemasons today and ask them about the history of Freemasonry, and there would be a small section of them who would probably decide to fight you to the death, you know, like pistols at dawn kind of a thing to say that their origins stem all the way back to none other than King Solomon. And that basically when the temple was being built, the stonemasons passed on secret knowledge from one generation of stonemasons to the next. But then if you were to go back to that same body of poll takers and ask the rest of them, where's the history stem from? Many of them would agree that more likely than not, the origins came from the middle, medieval ages of Britain, where a lot of people worked within associations of trade, so sort of like guilds.
Right.
And this was really convenient for them because they needed a way to be making contacts and pass on the tricks of the trade. And also, this was a way to keep outsiders out. So, if you were to find a group of men during this particular time period and ask them all what they did, it wouldn't be uncommon for them to answer, oh, well, I'm a Freemason and that guy's a free carpenter and he's a free potter and he's a free gardener. But there's a significant difference between the stonemasons and the rest of these guys who belonged in their
right.
crafts and guilds, because there was a lot of security and permanence, a sense of permanence for many of these individuals. If you were like a gardener or a fisherman, you kind of stayed put.
Yeah.
And not so for the stonemasons, because during the Middle Ages, Britain was involved in creating larger and more intricate churches. And so stonemasons often had to travel great distances and stay in foreign places for months at a time or years at a time to build these great architectural structures.
Right, you get the feeling that this group of six guys and this girl, and they call each other a family.
They do. They're a clan,
which is this little mini clan are they're migrants, right? They just they're Definitely. All over the place.
They are. And the problem with that is that, you know, if you are traveling to some place where nobody knows you, you have to have a way of people being able to trust that you've got the skills, the high level of skills required for the job. You also have to say the same mindset, you know, can we get along? Do you believe the same things that we do? Can we live together? And so an organization was formed, and one of those lodges, like the Freemasons had, and they basically set up a system where if you came to a site, you had to find a way to prove that you belong to this organization. And what better way to do that than to have some sort of a secret code?
There you
like
go.
A handshake.
Oh.
So that was one of their ways. But then eventually they got a little bit more sophisticated and decided to set up things like bylaws, where they appropriated how apprenticeships would work, and sort of a mental mindset, a philosophy of life where you could live together charitably as becomes sworn brethren, you know, that sort of
yes.
thing.
Yes.
All right, so we should take a moment and do a drop.
Yes, we should.
And be right back.
Sure, we'll do that.
Okay.
All right, and you're listening here. Oh, we're going to tell you where you're listening here to.
right? Because that's kind of in the drop, Clinton.
Because that's kind of the point of the drop.
Yeah.
This is where I miss David, because he's so smooth about this.
yeah, he just yells drop into the mic really loudly. I miss that. Love you, David.
Drop! 23 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art. And if you're just joining us, how's that coffee feeling, huh?
How's feels it good, doesn't there? It?
So nice.
And why didn't you share? That's my question.
There you go. And we were sitting here talking to local author Shelley Sackier about her latest YA book, The Freemason's Daughter. Okay, so here, are you ready for the question?
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Bring it on.
Here's the question. Here's the question. So, Outlander.
Oh, yeah. Great book. Wonderful author. Definitely. Love it. Love her. Diana Gabaldon, one of my favorite authors ever. I find the fact that her history is so amazingly complex and so unlike most authors. You know, I think she was like a biologist or a chemist or both of them. I know she's got a lot of degrees. And just so incredibly clever, decided just for fun to sit down and write a book. And, if you know anything about her history, I think it was sort of a bit of an experimental process where she didn't actually decide to write a book. She just sort of sat down and was involved in a couple of different communities online back when the internet was really just starting to begin. And sort of trading, you know, writing a little bit, a chapter here or there, and then getting some feedback on it. And people were saying, oh, my Godfathers, you have got to put this between two hardcovers. You know, really, this belongs between cardboard.
Oh, my Godfathers, I'm so using that from now on. Stolen.
Tell me that wasn't just a lark for her.
Right?
I seriously think that it was just one of those moments where you realize that you have an incredibly, you know, buried talent that nobody knew about. And thank goodness she found out about it, because there are so many billions of people in the world who are super grateful for it.
Yeah.
So what is it like to have an artistic piece that is so much that falls so easily into the wake of another piece that is so well known? Because at this point, like, not only have a bunch of people read Outlander, but there's the television show.
Right.
One of the reviewers of your book on the back cover said Outlander for the YA set. I mean, it's just...
And that's incredibly flattering, although there is no time travel in my book whatsoever. It is strictly reality. The only, you know, error within factual information is that I decide to take with artistic liberty, you know, and as a writer of fiction, I get to make stuff up all the time.
There you go.
So I stick with general history and, you know, sprinkle in a lot of actual real life people, but...
And can I say, knowing Outlander, it was really difficult reading your book because she's running around with six guys and I'm like, oh my God, I'm waiting for the rape to happen.
Oh my God, Clinton.
Again, you're revealing so much, you know. About no, it's definitely YA material, and more so on the younger side of YA as well. It's for people who enjoy history and whatnot, but also, you know, a fairly good yawn in the Scots. Yarn, I meant to say, not yawn. That was a Freudian slip.
So, why did you decide to make it a young adult novel?
Well, I absolutely adore the YA genre. I think that it sort of gets a bad rap. It is certainly not meant just for the specified 13 to 19-year-old age group of the demographics that it's usually catered to, because there is such a wide swath of adults who read YA literature.
Yeah.
Very importantly, because it tends to touch upon some of the most tender moments of our life, or some of the most humiliating, embarrassing, and wretched moments of growing up. But it basically is sort of like a portal back to a younger self of us, of ourselves, where, you know, we're very innocent. We have these ideals of purity and possibility. And
we also think we know everything.
Right. And that's sort of a safety catch, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that gives us this sort of brave, courageous ability to leap and then expect that a net is going to appear. But as we get older, we tend to believe that once we've reached an age of majority, that we sort of also reach a place of stasis. And that's not true, because we are constantly evolving as individuals, growing into, you know, blossoming and forever evolving into some new stage of our life. And I think that YA literature for a lot of adults allows them to become very vulnerable again and to imagine what it's like to be so filled with hope and determination and some sort of, you know, plan for the future. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't you think also that YA tends to have a little, I mean, it tends to have a lighter feel to it. There tends to be a little bit more room for whimsy. And
there
tends to be a little bit more room for especially for things like this, for also for fantasy in it. I mean, it seems like it like when you, with adult novels, there's a certain cachet that comes. There should be a
It's got to be severely grounded in something.
Like,
yeah,
you know, you're going to do Outlander. People are going to be running around trying to rape your heroine all the time.
Oh,
you know, it's just
right. Yeah, although,
that's not, for those of you who have not read Outlander, that's not the entirety of the book.
It's got a lot of science in there. Really.
Yeah,
a
whole lot of it. But still, in all, oh my gosh.
Yeah, right. Although there are, you know, edgier YA genres, you know, up in the top end of the spectrum. It's just, I think it's a genre that allows you to play with it in so many capacities. There aren't a lot of hard and fast, rigid rules. It's a place where there's sort of a blank canvas of experimentation. So I like the freedom of that genre. Although I do write, you know, for new adult and adult as well, just and middle grade. I just really am drawn to the YA genre.
New adult, is that really a category?
It is. It's sort of a newer category where it, you know, catches the last end of being a teenager and then sort of your 20s or so. So there's a big chunk.
I'm like,
yeah, new adult.
I never
my
knew.
Goodness. Is there a category for not yet adult? should be an adult, but not yet an adult?
I guess that would be
that's the part of the bookstore that I should be going to.
Teenage boys? I don't know.
Yes. Boys in general, actually.
You just couldn't let that go.
No, I couldn't let that go. You opened that door so lovely for me.
I opened. No, she soft pitched you that one.
I'm not stepping that one anymore.
Right in there. Just like,
get myself in trouble with readers.
No. So, one of the things we like to talk to artists about on the show is how they monetize what they do.
Let's be honest. It's one of the things you like to talk to artists about.
Well, I mean, because traditionally...
Don't get me wrong. We like it when you talk to artists about it.
Well, traditionally, I mean, artists are not necessarily the best business people. You know, that's just not where our brain works the best. So talk a little bit about how you got... I mean, did you get an agent or did you just send your book around to people and get it picked up? Like, how did you actually get it traditionally published?
Yeah, traditionally published.
And it is traditionally published.
Right? It is.
Yeah.
It indeed is by HarperCollins. And I am super, super grateful to them. So I did, I was lucky enough to get myself an agent. And that process can be a multi-year, you know, long slog where you are sending out your material in hopes that it's going to catch somebody's eye and then they fall in love with it, because that's what you really want. You don't want an agent who's just going to say, meh, you know, I could probably sell this. You want somebody who says, this kept me awake at night. And I know people who this has to be on the desk of their desk tomorrow morning. So finding an engaged agent is first and foremost important. And then,
engagement, as it were.
An engagement. I like that. I'm going to use that term. and then it's their job, as you diligently slave away at your desk working on new material, for them to schlep your book to all the different editors at publishing houses that they think it's going to be a great match for. And then it is also their job to very eloquently negotiate a contract after you have yourself a publishing house who's interested. And if you're really, really lucky, I wasn't this time, but one day it's my goal, is that you have competing editors, you know, who are then, you know, auctioning off your book. And that does happen for some people, but the book has really got to be something quite spectacular. And then, you know, then they negotiate in advance on royalties, and you hope that that's going to pay your mortgage for a couple of months.
And, well, I'm glad to know that that particular horrible thought is, you know, just will keep coming to me. That's nice. That's comforting.
When do they float it to Hollywood, make you rich, and have you sitting next to the Harry
Potter
from
that.
Your lips to God's
sitting
ears.
Next to J.K.
Right?
Rollins.
Can we please?
Well, Shelley, before you get big and famous, we hope that you will write more. We hope that you will come back on our show. It's been wonderful having you here.
Thank you both of you for so much. This has just been a real pleasure and a lot of laughs. I've enjoyed it enormously.
Good.
Tell people again the name of the book and when it comes out.
The name of the book is The Freemason's Daughter. Ta-da. And it comes out on Tuesday.
Yay!
Get it where you get books.
That's right.
Everywhere.
Everywhere you'll get books.
Everywhere you get books. All right.
Am I doing
this? Yeah, I guess you're doing at least half of it.
Okay, so I got to do the list now. Okay, fine. I need music, Clinton.
I'm getting music.
Okay. He's thinking about it anyway. Here are just some of the artistic events happening this week. It's your last chance. It's the last play of the American Shakespeare Center's Renaissance season, Sheridan's School for Scandal, all playing at the Blackfriars Playhouse in Stanton. Your last chance to see Dancing with Myself, seven high school girls wear the labels they are forced to bear at Four County Players, which I saw Friday. It was really good. Currently running June 30th, Dallas photographer Janine Mika-Bales exhibits her new collection, Through Darkness to Light, photographs along the Underground Railroad at the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center. Currently running April 30th, The Sky's the Limit paintings by Jeanette Cohen, curated by former guest Leslie Ava Shaw at Loving Cup Vineyard, opening reception on March 31st from 5:30 to 7:30. Today and tomorrow, Shenandoah Fringe Festival in Stanton. Oh, get your info at shinfringe.com.
Shinfringe.com!
Tomorrow, April 15th. That's not tomorrow. Why did you write tomorrow on here? April 15th, Tom Tom Founders Festival, including its City as Canvas Mural Project. That sounds interesting. April 11th, the LYAO Comedy Festival featuring UVA's longest-running improv group, The Weathermen, at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. April 13th, UVA's MFA Reading Series at Millie Joe Coffee and Gelato continues with Rob Shapiro and Michael Sears. April 14th, another comedy festival, Open Mic Night, hosted by Chris Allen at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. April 15th, Craft Seaville at the Ix Art Park. Finding Your Emotional Truth at the Charlottesville Writer House. Instructors Jay Kaufman and Russell Greiger help participants to locate the central issue that forms their artistic identity and then talk about how to put that on the page. That sounds interesting. April 22nd, Charlottesville Writer House presents 500 Words or Less, a seminar about what a writer can accomplish in 500 words, led by Amanda Corman. Check the Writer House for fees and times. And your music options this week...
Boom! This afternoon, the Charlottesville Symphony at the First Presbyterian... No, don't do that. Symphony.
He's camera shy.
Charlottesville Symphony at the First Presbyterian Church, play works by Britten, Wagner, Puccini, and Mozart.
Oh, I love Puccini.
Puccini! I always love a little Puccini on my own rice. That's
oh my God. Move on.
Tonight, King Golden Banshee Celtic Jam at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub, April 11th, Bob Huntington, and then Travis Elliott at Fellini's, Red and the Romantics at Dirty Nelly's. On April 12th, the open mic night at Dogwood Restaurant at Palmyra. Also on April 12th, it's the intersection of modern jazz, improvisation, and contemporary classical music with the Restroy at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Church. Also on the 12th, Bobby St. Hours and Jimmy Sterling at Prairie Nada Farm Brewery. On the 13th, one mic stand, open mic night at the V. Earl Dickerson Building at PVCC, the Michael Ellswick Gathering, and then Tyler Dick at Fellini's. And then a night of graphic-oriented new music with UVA's New Music Ensemble, directed by Ai-Jen Feng at Old Cabell Hall. On April 14th, the UVA Chamber Singers present a program of passion music at Old Cabell Hall. And Bob Bennett is at Fellini's. There's an open mic jam, open music jam at the James River Brewery, and a Charlottesville hip hop showcase at the Villa Sports Bar and
That's
Ultra
right.
Lounge. Gladstone's at Dirty Nelly's also. And on April 15th, it's Alex Kevin and friends at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub and Evan Milk at Fellini's. The Robert Jospe Express at the Batesville Market. And the John Wyant Band in the Ante Room. And those are just some of those artistic things going on in Artistic Town.
We got a lot of stuff going on. We are awesome. Can I just say that?
We are artistic fat. Artistic fatness.
There are so many things going on in my head right now. I'm just going to let that go. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to.
It's 37 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Homegrown, your show about local art. Stay tuned, please, for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. Today, Rick Moore talks with Carolyn Engelhard, talking about the Affordable Care Act versus the Trump administration.
Oh, God.
I wish they would talk about the Affordable Care Act versus Obamacare, because one, but I don't like the other.
Right, and I think a lot of people need to know the difference.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed, certainly.
Just a little satire for your Sunday morning, people.
A little satire from the beginning of the show crept in the middle. Sorry about that. And, of course, we're brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. Blue Moon Diner, breakfast all day, every day with brunch on Saturdays and Sundays, and carefully constructed diner food on the weekday afternoons and evenings. And speaking of those weekday evenings.
Yes, tell us.
Did you know that the Blue Moon is nice enough to provide a venue for local and visiting artists?
You know, I did, but I don't know who is coming this week.
Well, let me tell you.
Oh, goody.
This week, Jim Wave on Wednesday. And then our friends Mojo Pie on Thursday. And then on Friday, it's Wonky Tonk, the Kentucky singer-songwriter Jasmine Poole doing her own brand of cowgirl punk.
I'm sorry. Cowgirl punk?
You'll just have to stop by on Friday
yes,
to hear. Blue Moon Diner, 512 West Main Street. Blue Moon Diner. It's a place.
It's a place. It's a place that has lovely French toast, which I wish I was eating right now.
Oh my God.
I'm a little hungry.
Oh my God.
The coffee isn't, you know. Okay, anyway.
Let's go to our next guest.
Yes, let's go to our next guest. Shall we do that? Oh my goodness. Okay. Our next guest. The lovely Melissa Charles.
Coming on Homegrown for the first time.
Yay, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you are the artistic director of DMR Adventures Theater Company.
That's right.
That's a lovely title.
Isn't it?
That's a lovely title. So what does DMR stand for?
It stands for Dreams Made Real.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a lovely thing to have people guess what it stands for.
Yes.
That's one of my favorite things.
Right.
But
I thought it was do macaroni religiously, personally.
Oh, my God.
That's a new one.
See, I just told you I was hungry. Why are you talking about food? Why do you do that to me?
You just told me you were hungry. Where did you think my mind was? I'm still stuck on food.
That's what he does. He tortures me, Melissa. Right. So so how long has DMR been running?
Well, I started DMR in Danville, Virginia about 8 years ago.
Oh,
actually. And I moved to Charlottesville about 5 years ago and freelanced and worked all around the city. And then I realized that there wasn't anything quite like that here.
Right.
And so I decided to start it back up here in Charlottesville. And it's growing very, very quickly, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Right now, we're offering classes and performing opportunities for kids of all ages. And hopefully, we'll expand, as we did in Danville, and incorporate adults as well.
Great. Okay, so...
So you started in Danville?
Yes.
What was that like?
That was a really interesting... Well, here's the thing. I'm from Danville. My husband's from Danville. And I was working as an actor in LA.
Then I'm sorry I said it like, Danville?
Well, I hear that a lot, to be honest. I was working as an actor doing film and TV in LA. And it was going pretty well. But we came home for a cousin's wedding. And honestly, like, it felt sort of like a calling, for lack of a better word. Like, we felt like we really needed to be a part of the downtown revitalization. And we could see so many areas that we could help. And I'm just really passionate about downtown communities, especially those that need a little bit of help and need art. And there wasn't anything for kids to do there. I mean, except for maybe some dance training, which is really great there.
Preach. And soccer. Yeah, talk about
That's it.
It.
Yeah.
And so I started this as just... a program with the Parks and Recreation Department there, and it grew and expanded. And I tell you, the mission there was really a little bit different than it is here, because it was really all about bringing performing arts opportunities to kids who could not afford it.
Right.
And that's still a part of our mission and will always be, because that is close to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But it then became about growing youth leaders, not just in the performing arts, but that would go out into the community and transform the community.
Yeah.
And that is a part of what we're doing here in Charlottesville as well. And it's just been very exciting. It's been a very incredible community builder, both in Danville and in here. And even though the community is different, it's awesome to see this diverse group coming together in both places.
So talk about that. Talk about this push for you to bring arts to children who, one, take a step back. Talk about the phenomenon of kids not having access to art and art training and art opportunities, and to why you feel it's so necessary to provide that access.
Well, as we know, we're arts are going out of our schools. I mean, day in and day out, they are just being removed, and it's hard. It's hard running community arts programs as well. When we put on a show and license a show, it costs well over $1,000 just to start, just with the licensing.
Yep.
So it's hard for people to do this, and I've poured my time and money into it because I was one of those kids. I grew up in Rocky Mount, Virginia, the moonshine capital of the world.
Right.
And we didn't have a lot of access to arts, but we did have some theater classes in school. But luckily, we also had a professional theater company in Roanoke. So my parents did whatever they could. We didn't have a lot of money, but they cleaned the dance studio. Mm-hmm. You know, they did whatever they needed to do to make sure I had access to the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like I owe it to all the kids that maybe don't have parents that can do that to try to find ways, or to help parents who are in tough situations. We give tons of scholarships and work with families to make this work for them financially.
Mm-hmm.
Back to your question, Clinton, like it gives the kids so much confidence. It gives them a family. There's so many kids, especially kids who are drawn to the arts, I feel like are a little bit different.
Yeah.
And those are the kids who are more likely to be bullied in school. They're the kids who are more likely to be outsiders. They're the kids who are likely to not finish school.
Yeah, because they're the other.
Exactly. Yeah. And I can't tell you how many kids, especially in Danville, were maybe not going to graduate from school.
Yeah.
But because of the family that was created through these programs, they were able to get to school. They were able to get transportation or get the confidence to say, like, it's okay to be here. I have a support system outside of this place where I'm being picked on or bullied, or don't feel like I belong. I have a place, and that's for me.
Mm-hmm.
And more than anything, I think that's what's important.
And it's great that you say family, because having been a kid in school and in arts in school, I remember that feeling of like that feeling that here, that you had found your clan, had found your place.
Right.
There was a place where you belonged.
Yeah, and my high school drama teacher did that for us. Like, she was the mom, and she made it an absolute imperative that if anybody wanted to be a part of it, they were instantly part of the family. I mean, we had, and it was odd. And even as a teenager, I knew it was weird that we had kids from all different walks of life. Because, you know, in high school, you split off into your groups. You know, you're a jock, you're a cheerleader, you're the nerd, you're the goth person. But we had all of those kids that worked in our theater program. Like the captain of the football team was in Robinson Crusoe, and he played a woman. He played like the queen of the cannibals or whatever. I mean, in a coconut bra and a grass skirt. You know, like that's the kind of community that she created, and that's what has made me stick with theater for odd years. because it's always been about family. It's always been about finding that group of people that understood me.
So how do you turn the outsider, the kid who feels the outsider, the picked on, the bullied one, into a community leader?
Well, that's a great question. And I don't know that I have like the answer for that. I think the biggest thing is just support and encouragement and confidence. But for me, I think one of the things that I feel really blessed with is I can look at a kid and try to find something that they're really good at and point them towards that, or something that I feel like they could do if they had a little bit of encouragement.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was in Danville, I started because of my first theater baby, Austin Bowen, who's now a professional actor in New York.
Mm-hmm.
He worked, this is a kid who would like work five jobs at a time, you know, help his mom out with the rent and get him, got himself through high school and college. Like I can't even, anyway, he came to me and said, I want to help you with your first production. He was in high school at the time. And I was like, great. I've been wanting to incorporate kids backstage.
Mm-hmm.
And that youth leadership program has become an integral part of DMR Adventures. And it is so exciting to see the kids take on major leadership roles.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is they become more respectful when they're in other productions of the leaders in that production, because they understand what it takes and how hard it is. And then it just sort of breeds this wonderful, respectful community, because they understand the kids look up to them. You know, they feel that responsibility,
right,
which is, I think, more than anything in doing this, is what is transforming the kids.
Yeah.
They take on responsibility. Mm-hmm. They're in charge of something. And so they feel important. They feel valued.
Yeah.
And they feel like it's up to them to make sure something happens.
And, you know, I think that's something that a lot of people miss about kids. They think that they have to talk down to them, or they think that they have to put a lot of pressure on them. Like, you know, you have to do this and da da da. And it's like, no, if you simply set standards and say, this is where you have to be, they will do what they need to do to meet it.
Absolutely.
And you don't have to be mean. You don't have to be mean mommy. You can just simply say, here's how this is done. This is professional level, and here's where you need to be. And they won't figure out a way to make it happen.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
And often I think asking them, for instance, when we're doing a show, what is the story we're telling?
Mm-hmm.
Why are we telling the story? You know, the answers that they give are often much, much more enlightened than what I could even think of.
Right.
And so really turning over and collaborating with them has been really special.
Mm-hmm.
And when they feel like it's okay to take risks and it's okay to put myself out on the line and get an answer I'm scared about, like those are seemingly small details, but those are actually the big things can transform a kid and make them become a leader.
Let's take a moment for a drop. Drop! 15 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art, and we are here, if you were just joining us, with Melissa Charles, artistic director of DMR Adventures.
Yay!
And if you missed it, then you don't know what DMR stands for. You'll just have to guess.
You will have to, you know, deal with that pain.
I'll tell you this, apparently it doesn't have anything to do with macaroni.
Thank you. Thank you, Clinton. So, Melissa, you've got classes for kids, you've got performing opportunities for kids. What type of performing opportunities, like what kind of shows are you doing?
Well, we're primarily known for doing musical theater.
Okay.
We just produced our first full production, which was like a 2-hour production of 13, the musical at PVCC.
Oh.
We often do the Broadway Junior and Kids titles,
mm-hmm,
because it allows for the kids to have somewhat of an intensive commitment, usually only like 1 or 2 days a week,
right,
where they can still put on a show but have it be pretty short.
Right.
So that's what we've been focusing on. Of course, throughout the summer, we're going to be doing tons of shows, from the Shrek Jr. to Broadway at the Paramount and Broadway Bound with Brad Bass. So we have tons of things coming up for the summer, as well as, I think the big news is that we're starting a new performing arts space.
Yes!
Dun, 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 dun,
yes, 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 yes. Talk about that.
So it's called the Belmont Arts Collaborative. And we already have 7 different organizations that we're collaborating with, which is so exciting.
That's
because
great.
I mean, I just had this idea in my head. Ever since I moved to Charlottesville, I knew we needed a smaller performing space that could be shared by groups that needed it.
Right.
We don't really have anything in town that allows performance groups, whether it's dance, improv, or musical
theater.
To just
say, hey, we've got something. We just need a space. Yeah.
And we were running a cabaret series, a musical theater cabaret series at Bond before it closed. And that was really successful, but we were selling out really quickly. So we needed something a little bit bigger, but not as big as, let's say, like the Charlottesville High School Martin Luther King Performance Center. Like that, that's a little too big for most companies, especially companies that are just getting off their feet.
Yeah.
So in May, we're producing our productions of A Year with Frog and Toad Kids, which is going to be adorable. Kids as young as 5 dressed as snails. It's so cute, you
guys.
Oh, my
God.
You have to come see it if you can get tickets, which is going to be hard. And Aladdin Kids, which is part of our DMR Playhouse. And that's completely directed, designed, choreographed by kids. And it's going to be an incredible production. I'm so proud of our creative team on that.
That's great.
It is. And then you can find a title of show produced by Phoenix Theater Works coming in May. We're also going to be working with Big Blue Door to provide a space for improv on Thursday nights starting in June.
That's awesome. Great.
And they are working to finance their police stories. It's it's a show, a devised piece from interviews with police officers in the community. So try to look them up, Big Blue Door, and support that initiative. Yeah. It's really important. We're also talking to Premier Playhouse, another new theater group, Victory Hall Opera, about we have some tentative dates lined up there.
Yeah.
And then one of my students, Grayson Katzenbach, who played Miss Hannigan just last year in Annie, has already started her own fencing company. She's like a national fencing champion.
Seriously?
She is going to bring her fencing instruction to the Belmont Arts Collaborative with some camps this summer and hopefully some classes in the future. And then my friend Heather Hightower, a voice teacher, is having a satellite studio for Center for Vocal Study at DMR. And
wow, that's just exploding.
There's so many things.
That's a lot of stuff.
And then I'm not sure if you know about the Autism Theater Project, but we helped get that off its feet with our production of Captain Louie a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be doing a production with them for Frog and Toad Kids. We're really excited to be able to bring that to those families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I know Kate Lambert,
you know, Carmel Leslie, you remember Carmel Clavin was working on what did she call it? It wasn't the foundry. The kitchen.
Kitchen. Yes. The kettle.
The kettle and Stanton. Another shared
space.
Oh,
yeah.
Funny.
Yeah. So I think that's the way that that the arts are going to go.
Well, it's
in
at least one way
like
that
us.
Arts can go, and a really engaging way that arts can go.
Yeah.
And it makes sense because we have a shared audience, and, and we can open up new audiences to people
to
who haven't
other.
Seen it
exactly.
before.
Exactly. Yes.
And yeah, it just gives a really wonderful feeling to the environment already. So we had our soft opening yesterday with our production of Godspell Jr. that we did as a part of our spring break camp, and it was so much fun. We had so many volunteers just pour their time and energy into getting this theater ready. So it's still pretty raw. It's in sort of phase one, but we're excited to move up, and I'll be doing some fundraising very soon.
Yeah. So how many seats is it?
Well, it depends on the show because it is a black box, but typically we'll seat between 50 and 90.
Wow. That's a nice space.
It is a nice number for what we need. And we have a beautiful parking lot. It's handicapped accessible. And then we have our DMR Adventure Studios next door. So for those wishing to have rehearsal space, or a larger backstage sort of for dressing rooms, we'll have that opportunity
that
as well.
That is awesome. Mm-hmm. I am so glad that this space exists now for people because, you know, Clinton and I, we do stuff all the time where we have conversations all the time where we're like, yeah, it'd be really great to do that. Where would we do it?
But where are we going to do it? Where are we going to rehearse it?
Exactly. There's always those questions and to artists, you know, especially
and usually I'm the one asking. She's saying, "Oh, we should do this," and I'm like, "Where are we going to do it? How is it this?"
And
this
I'm
is why
saying,
it won't work for these 20 reasons,
right? And I'm standing there going, "But we'll work that out. We can figure that out. Let's just decide to do it." Well, once again, why we work so well together because he says no and I say yes.
I don't think that's true.
Well, I hope you guys can join us sometime with one of your productions at the new Belmont Arts Collaborative. We're also hosting a lot of our summer camps there this summer. And I don't know if you know, but we bring in a lot of
the summer camps you got. Like, we bring in, so if people want to get involved with DMR.
Yes. Go to DMRAdventures.com. Or you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. But our please go to the website. That's where you'll find our summer camp registration and our spring class registration. So we're starting some new classes coming up as soon as next week, including hip-hop theater. So if you love Hamilton, it's really dance. But Maria Daniel teaches also all about the culture of hip hop. This class is super successful. Becca Vervulis, who just played Velma Kelly at Four County Players, she's teaching a couple of musical theater classes. And then we're also running some acting classes that aren't musicals for the people that really wanted that. So there's so many wonderful things coming up in the spring. And then in the summer, we have some incredible guest artists pairing with local guest artists running some of our camps, including some Broadway artists who will be coming in to work with the kids.
That's great.
We're in talks with a current lead in a huge hit Broadway show to come and teach for Broadway at the Paramount this August. Wow. You guys, it's so exciting.
And you know it's going to be big because she said a current cast member. Like, she can't even say the name.
Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Can't wait to have you back on the show to find out what's going on next.
I know, right?
This is Charles, DMR Adventures. Check out their website.
Wow, we've had a packed show, Clinton. I'm
it's a packed show.
I'm pooped.
How are you?
I'm pooped. I can't do a rant.
What?
I can't. I can't.
Well, we should throw people to our Facebook page. If you're upset at Leslie not doing a rant, as I'm sure you are,
there you go.
Go to the Facebook page.
Yeah, sure.
Let her know that.
Yeah, I'll read all about that. No, really, I will. I'll read every single one of those complaints. I will. No problem.
All right. Well.
So, indeed. Clinton, tell everyone what is. Close out the show for us. Can you do that?
I will attempt to do that.
You will attempt to do that?
Indeed.
Well, you know, Yoda said, "Do or do not. There is no try." I'm just saying.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. For that, I'm just going to sit here.
You're just going to sit there?
I'm just going to sit here now.
Isn't there a rule about dead air on the radio? I'm just saying. You might want to, you know, rethink that.
Fine. Fine. This has been Homegrown, your show about local art. 94.7, Progressive Voice. We'd like to thank our guest, Shelley Sackier and Melissa Charles, for coming on and enlightening our lives. Coming up next, Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with Rick Moore. Their guest is Carolyn Engelhart, talking about the Affordable Care Act versus the Trump administration. Stay tuned for that, because if you leave, then you will be bereaved. Thank you very much. It's been your host, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
You have trouble saying my name now? What's that?
I'm just thinking about Clinton. And enjoy your macaroni today. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville.